Hi, I'm Lucia.
And I'm Nell, and this is Totally Normal About That, a podcast where we explore various pieces of queer media and the things we love, hate, and love to hate about them. This week, we're feeling totally normal about Twilight. Let's dive in.
Oh, Twilight. Okay. We're specifically going to be talking about the movie today.
Right.
You know, obviously there are the books, and those are going to be mentioned a little bit because, you know, the movie is adapted from the books. But we're really sticking to the film, and I'm sure at some point we'll end up coming back and talking about the rest of the movies and the book and whatever. But we just figured that since we're going to be talking about vampires for pretty much the entirety of October, what better way to kick off fall than with a discussion about this movie, which was a pivotal piece of media when we were obviously like growing up. So
Yeah, I was in the eighth grade when the movie came out, and the fifth grade when the book came out. So obviously it was quite a big piece of my childhood, of my adolescence. And it's like, it's the best worst movie because it's so terrible, but it's also so like comforting because of that.
Right. Like, there's just something about it. Like, I mean, obviously we can get into the plot a little bit and there are great things about it and also some things that like I hate, but like the movie in particular is flawed in a way that like is separate from the book. just because of the way that it was filmed and styled and everything. And so, I don't know. I have feelings about it that are somewhat in tune with the story itself and somewhat just straight up because of the way that the movie was done.
I think this is a movie that definitely falls into the love to hate category a little bit. Maybe hate to love sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. Like, oh, what a... what a series, you know? Like, I just... where do you even begin, honestly? Where do you begin?
I mean, I think we have to begin with the fact that the movie was came out in 2008 and was directed by Catherine Hardwicke. Stars Kristen Stewart as Bella Swan and Robert Pattinson as Edward Cullen, who spends the entire movie looking like he wishes he would rather be anywhere else, and has basically spent every moment since then, anytime he's asked about it, talking about how he would have rather been anywhere else.
Yes. It's also notable that it's obviously based on the original book Twilight, which was written by Stephenie Meyer, which released October 5th, 2005. And I just think that's notable for a couple of reasons. First, because it came out right after the Supernatural show came out, and both pieces of media were very pivotal in my love of vampires and monsters and genre fiction, both written and filmed in general. And also because, again, just 2005, what a year, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, it was a time for, like, kind of cult media, I feel like. It was, yes, a time where it was really all these things where it was like, this has no reason to have the following it has, but here it is.
Truly. And I mean, I was 13 in that year when those things came out. So both of them just, like, really hit me right at the right time. This book and then the subsequent movie were obviously made exactly for that audience, for like, you know, somewhere between like 13 and 20. And so the books and then subsequently the movies just really came out right at the exact time that like I was of the age for them to be marketed to.
Right.
And I just remember like immediately becoming obsessed with them. And I had read, obviously, like, several of the books before the first movie came out because they were coming out in subsequent years. And then went in to see the movie, and wow, like, what a choice.
It's one of those things where when you're reading them, when you're like a young teen, that you're like, this is so romantic. And then you grow up and you're like, ew, David.
I mean, it's definitely that. Like, it's definitely part of it. As I watch it again as an adult and as I think about the themes, I'm just, there's like the adult part of me that is like, oh my God. Like, I have questions. There's choices made. Like, I'm judging so hard. There's so much cringe happening. But, like, you know, the young, altruistic romantic that I was at 13, like, really bought into these stories and was just like, yes, this is beautiful and I love it.
He loves,
and,
like, you know, he's watching her sleep. That's so cute. He's so into her. And now I'm like, get out, you gross, creepy old man. Like, if you take the vampire aspect out of it, this gross, creepy old man is watching a teenage girl sleep.
She's like, I'm unequivocally, irrevocably in love with him. And I'm like, you guys met like 2 weeks ago. Calm down.
Oh my God. Their whole deal is just like, ugh, it's so cringe. And it's like everyone seems to think this is romantic except Rosalie, who in fact is the correct one the whole time, because she's like, you just met, you're old, she's a literal teen girl,
right? She's just like, not only that, but she's like, this is ruining my life. Like, I have a life and you're disrupting it, and that's so inconvenient for me. Which, you know, now again as an adult, that's how I view everything. I'm just like, oh my God, why are you doing that? That's so inconvenient for me. I tell people that every time that they, like, you know, choke on their drink or something when they're with me. So, like, you know, when you do that, when you, like, swallow wrong and all of a sudden they go, like, you're like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, I, like, can't breathe. I'm like, please don't die. That would be so inconvenient for me right now if you died while we're out getting coffee. Like,
I say all the time, I'm like, they really didn't consider my needs when they made that decision.
Correct. They didn't. They didn't consider me at all. I never thought I would be the Rosalie of the group, but, like, I've become that person.
Here we are.
But, again, like, you know, as a 13-year-old reading these books and then, you know, subsequently a teenager, like, watching the movies and everything, I was really into them. And I definitely wasn't alone because, I mean, they were a phenomenon for a reason. They went on to be made into 5 movies for a reason. And part of that was because, you know, young people of the time, boys and girls, like, really fell in love with these books. Like, they were, you know, modern age romance, like, of the era. And one of the things that I distinctly remember is I went to all of the movies when they were being released in theaters, and they were packed movie theaters. Like, yes. This was right when theaters were really getting into assigned seats. When, you know, when that transition was happening, yeah. Where you weren't just buying tickets, you were buying, like, tickets in row F, seat 7, yeah. Or whatever. And yes. And I remember, like, I think it was either the 4th or 5th movie I went to, and, you know, we had assigned seats. And I remember it was a big deal because, like, people that I went with had to sit separately because they didn't all buy their tickets together at the same time. And we're, like, trying to negotiate with people to sit together. And it was a whole thing of, like, no, every seat in this theater is full. You can't just pick a different seat. Like, you have to sit where your ticket is. Because it was packed. Like, there was nothing else. So clearly, you know, they're a beloved franchise.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a phenomenon that it really, like, I remember it being in class at school. I was in, like, it was like a home ec kind of class that I was taking. And I remember, like, talking with people about it, and that we all had to do that egg thing. Where you, like,
parachutes
you,
or whatever?
No, where you blow out an egg and then you have an egg baby for a while to learn about how to be a responsible parent. You didn't do this, apparently.
No, I mean, I think I'm familiar with the concept with, like, the sack of flour, but I've never blown out an egg before.
Yeah, so you poke a hole in each side and then you learn how to blow the egg out of the, like, very
okay, you have to stop saying it like that. It sounds really dirty. Sure. Try a different way.
You remove the contents of the egg without smashing the egg.
Okay. Okay.
And then you'd, like, dress it up like a baby. You decorate it, and then we had to make, like, a baby book. And I'm pretty sure I named mine Carlisle. Like, everybody was naming their egg babies after Twilight stuff.
Oh my god, I love it so much. You had to,
like, make it a little home in, like, a little Tupperware or whatever and, like, take it everywhere with it, with you, because you had to be responsible. just like, now I'm like, wow.
Right, like,
I don't feel like I actually learned anything about parenthood doing that.
Core memories being unlocked here, folks, like, right now. Yeah. Well, and clearly the movies, like, not only had an impact on us as a society, in that, like, we know what they are and we continue talking about them, but, like, they clearly were impactful in terms of, like, audience and profit, because there's recently been the decision to re-release the movies in theaters at the end of October and very beginning of November. So I believe from October 29th, I have to check the dates, because yes, October 29th through November 2nd, they're doing special re-releases of the movies in theaters.
Happy birthday to me.
Right? Each day is going to be one of the movies basically being released for their 20th anniversary of the franchise. So we've, again, recently celebrated Supernatural. Now we're celebrating Twilight. So what a year for anniversaries.
Yes, quite, yeah.
Which, like, 20 years, dude, that's... Wow. Just...
I know, oh god, I feel so old thinking about 20 years of Twilight, of the movie.
Like, it makes sense, but also it hurts my feelings a little bit.
Yeah, 20 years, I guess 20 years of the book. Yeah, it make, like, I get it, but also I would like not to.
It helps. So the thing that helps me process the fact that time has continued is that I have a child and he's 10. And so I'm just like, well, yes, obviously 20 years makes sense math-wise, because my child is 10. Like, it would be that much. But there's also a part of me that struggles to process that I have a child, much less that he's 10. So, like,
old enough to read Twilight.
Stop it. Just don't even go there.
Too late. I said it.
I don't want to think. That's so embarrassing for me, actually. I don't want to think about that.
I'm not saying, like, he should.
I know. What I'm not saying that he shouldn't. What I'm saying is there's a part of me that's just like, he's going to reach an age where he's old enough to read the things that I read as a kid, and then he is going to have the capacity to judge them. And I don't want to be judged like that.
Okay, but he's never going to understand, like, the cultural context of 2005 as a year.
Exactly, though. He because won't have the context.
Thing. It's not like I was into this one weird thing. It's everybody was into vampires. Everybody was into this thing. Everyone was into this idea of, like, you know, it was the time. It was, like, the renaissance of the vampire.
That is very true.
Because it was just, like, yeah. It was, like, right after Buffy was ending, and so everyone was looking for the next thing to, like, fill that void, and vampires were such a thing.
Yes. Yes. Again, it's very interesting to me as a fan of both, and I am, like, whether you love Twilight or not, whether you think it's amazing or cringe, or both, in my case, I think it's both, I am, like, unashamedly a fan, because I am. Like I said, I grew up on them. I love them. So I'm going to be here to praise it and diss it in equal measure. Be prepared, folks. But it is a very unique representation of vampires. and as someone who is also a fan of Supernatural, again, both good and bad in equal measure, like... That show and other shows like it really do kind of capture the more common modern iteration of, like, what a vampire is. Mm-hmm. Whereas this show just did something completely different, or this media did something completely different. And the movies in particular have just such a weird way of like presenting them to us, both like visually and emotionally, that I have weird feelings about.
Okay. Tell me more about your weird feelings.
So I feel like part of the draw of vampires for myself and for most people is that they're a bit taboo, right? They're monsters. They're monstrous. They represent something that is like a little bit fringe, a little bit questionable, like outside the norm. Again, taboo, you're kind of breaking some rules there. Not just in the fact that, like, they're literally monsters that drink people's blood or whatever, but also just the allure of being attracted to and also attractive to something that is so different and so dangerous and scary. And there's a little bit of that in Twilight, in that, you know, Bella is special and Edward really likes her and he picks her out of everybody. He's not interested in any of the girls until he meets Bella. But like, he's not doing a whole lot in this movie to feel unhuman, or like they don't present him very different. They like tell you things about him that are different, but like he's like, I don't know, there's just something about him that seems like too human.
He's very much an angsty teen boy. Like they do a really good very job much of an angsty teen boy. Angsty teen boy. They don't
He's very much an angsty really teen boy.
Do a great job of presenting why Bella would be fascinated with him versus sort of other guys, because it's not just him, it's every single dude is obsessed with her. Like she moves and she it's moves true. There and so it's one of those things where she's as a character you have to kind of be like, oh my god, like everyone hates you because everybody is in love with you. And it's like mm-hmm. there is some of the like the shiny new toy, and obviously there's some like weirdness with Jacob in later books and movies, but it's everybody's obsessed with her. But there's not really, basically it seems like the only reason she likes him is that he is so vehemently against, like she seems fascinated by him from the start, and it seems like it's basically like they don't hang out with us, and she's like, oh, what a brooding mysterious bad boy.
I think what I struggle with is, again, like I said, the allure of vampires is that they're taboo, and there's always been a strong connection between monstrosity and queerness, because like queer people, monsters kind of live on the fringe and kind of exist outside of the norms of society, and there's like a certain allure to them and to their, you know, circumstances and their lifestyle and everything, but also like an inherent tragedy that's kind of associated with that. And that comes through in pretty much all standard monster stories. Mm-hmm. Vampirism, specifically in terms of like media and fiction and everything, is inherently actually rooted in queerism, or in queerism, in queerness. In terms of like, there's gonna be a pause here because I'm trying to think of the name now. Carmilla. Mm-hmm. It like took me a hot second, but you know, this is actually one of the oldest vampire stories, and it's specifically about the sapphic vampire Carmilla. And you know, so there's, it existed even before like the Dracula story really became common. It was written in 1872, so I think it predates it by about 25 years or so. And it is essentially like a lesbian vampire. So there's something about those stories that have always been kind of inherently tied with queerness. And unfortunately for Twilight, it is the least queer vampire story in existence.
It's painfully straight.
It's painfully straight. It's painfully, like, cisgender. It's so heteronormative, just in, like, every way. And I think, obviously, part of that is the fact that, you know, Stephenie Meyer is Mormon and clearly took a lot of her inherent bias and religious beliefs and everything and sort of, like, wove a lot of that into this story and into the lore of the story. So, I mean, we see that, for example, with Edward and his beliefs about, like, his soul and, you know, how he's destined for hell and he's not going to turn Bella because he doesn't want to do that to her and damn her soul and whatever else. But, like, and obviously, again, the relationships between, like, the male and female characters in this, and the fact that, like, essentially every vampire is paired up with, like, a partner except Edward, who is, like, missing someone, and now he's found his perfect match in Bella, this young teenage girl and whatever, and they're basically, once they get together, they're, like, gonna be together forever. There's this, like, matrimonial level of commitment that's, like, between right. them. Right,
like, literally instantly. It's been a couple weeks, and it's, like, no, you're gonna grow old, and I'm gonna watch you grow old, and we're gonna be together, and I don't care. And it's, like, literally you guys just met. Like, I'm sorry. Show me the statistics on, like, I'm not saying that people who meet in high school don't stay together forever. Like, it happens. But statistically, it is more unlikely. And it's especially, like, Edward is, in a lot of ways, like, he's dead, right? He's a vampire. He's stuck forever in the body of a 17-year-old with a mind that has continued to age. Developmentally, in terms of that, they're at very different places.
I mean, the thing is, though, personally, I think that, yes, he's continued to age. I don't think he's continued to mature.
Well, no, he's definitely still a broody teen boy. Like a 17-year-old. Yeah, he's the broodiest teen boy of all time. But see, the thing is, they want us to think he's mature because he plays the piano and he listens to classical music.
Whatever, fine, sure, whatever. I'm not gonna argue about it. It is what it is. You know, he's old, it's fine. But, like, it's just, it's so straight. And doing so, they basically took all of the queer elements out of that. And part of doing that is, like, they stripped away all of the actual sense of danger.
Right.
And we're not getting into the book as much, but it's not, like, as notable in the book because, again, you don't have the visuals to kind of back all of that up. So you can imagine it however you want. But the movie in particular, that's part of the failing, is they're physically presenting vampires to you. And there's never anything about them that, like, looks really very suspicious. In part, again, because of just, like, the stylistic choices and the production value of the movie. Like, they have the red eyes, but the effect is not great, and they look so inherently not real that it's just kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, and their eyes, like, yeah, the good vampires have golden eyes because,
right,
I guess, sure.
But still, like, there'd be that hint of danger, like, yeah. Oh, their eyes flash red or whatever. Yeah. No, like, there's not, it doesn't feel scary. Mm-hmm. And, like, the shiny skin or whatever that sparkles like diamonds, okay, well, that's not scary at all. That's just pretty. Like, yes, okay. Like, that's not, it doesn't feel dangerous. I know there's supposed to be the idea of, like, they're so strong, their skin is essentially impenetrable or whatever, but you don't get that really from that part of the movie. And, like, they didn't even bother to give them fangs ever. It's not like they don't have them and then they appear. Like, they never have fangs at all. Yeah. And there's several scenes where they're like looking at one another or fighting with the vampires and they're showing their teeth. And there's absolutely no fangs there at all. And I'm just like, this isn't even scary. This is just two men like baring their teeth at one another in a completely non-scary way. Like, I just never felt like she was really actually in danger. Because they didn't do enough to, like, make them appear dangerous.
There's the whole scene where Edward throws the loudest pout in the forest about how he's, like, you know, he's, you know, as if I couldn't outrun you. As if I couldn't, you know.
Yes, he's, like, shouting from the trees.
He's, like, throwing a little tree, you know. As if you could fight me off, like, pulling up a little tree and throwing it. And then the whole, like, I'll show you the thing. It's my greatest shame, and it's that he's sparkly.
Which, I guess, for a 17-year-old boy, that would be your greatest shame. You're like, oh my god, I sparkle in the sun.
I'm so glittery. I look like the disco troll doll.
But, like, they just don't do a great job of, like, really emphasizing the danger. So, like, I watch the scene with James, and I'm like, I don't know, it's not that, like, it... Yes, she's in danger. I get it. Like, well, whatever. It's scary. But the scariest scene in the movie is when she's walking down that alley in the dark in the middle of the city and those men surround her.
Right.
And, like, they're not vampires, but I was like, oh, shit, something bad's gonna happen.
Right. Right.
How is that the scariest scene? There are vampires in this movie.
Just felt so... The James stuff just felt so, like, I don't know. What it was maybe about the actor, but he just, like, it all felt very, like, over the top, kind of trying to be creepy, like the head tilting with the wide eyes and the "you brought a snack" and, like, all it, like, it didn't ever feel, I don't know, it was all just very silly. And I have to say that the fact that they decided to make one of them a ponytail, make him ponytailed and, like, perpetually with his shirt unbuttoned. And then Edward had a hair that was, like, clearly supposed to be auburn, but was so obviously dyed. Like, the saturation they chose for it.
It's oh, the just, saturation is so bad.
It's just so stupid.
I just...
And then, yeah. And then you get the scene of, like, Edward trying to suck the venom out of Bella, but he doesn't look like he's in pain. He looks... Well, I mean, he does, but he looks like he's, like, constipated.
He looks like he's trying not to jizz his pain. I'm just like...
I mean,
I'm just saying, if that's the look that Robert Pattinson was going for, then he nailed it.
Well, he has gone on to play other roles in which he has famously, like, masturbated on screen. So, for actual. That was. But I do think, well, the whole thing is that her blood is supposed to be, like, the sweetest, most incredible thing ever. So, like, yep, maybe he
Yeah,
won't.
But I don't jizz my pants when I eat really good cake. Like...
Well, maybe that's a you problem.
Clearly, I'm not eating good enough dessert. Like, good lord. I knew, like, I know they call it better than sex cake, but I don't feel like it's makes you feel like you're having sex cake.
No. Well, listen, Edward's had a long life. Maybe some things got crossed. The fact that they can do certain activities at all is a little bit silly.
Anyway, I will say, I'm not going to fault the actor who plays James for the sometimes weird or off-putting choices that he made to portray that character, only because I feel like that is an issue that is consistent across the board with basically all of the characters and their representation. And I think a lot of it is actually more of, like, directorial choices that were made that just maybe in the moment, like, thought they would work really well and don't land right, because the whole movie feels overacted.
Right. Except a little bit for Kristen Stewart, who has the personality of a cardboard box in this, which actually works well because the character of Bella as a like has the personality of a cardboard box. And so, like, phenomenal job. And it's not like she can't, like, we know that they can all act. They've all done incredible things and other things. So it's like, I think they did quite well at showing Edward, like, Edward as being just this insufferable brooding teen and Bella having no personality whatsoever.
You know what really works for me with Robert Pattinson's portrayal of Edward is that once he and Bella start dating and they're, like, having a good time and she's, like, his girlfriend, he's so happy and cheerful and fun and flirty and he's having the best time. Like, he's an absolutely tortured, unbearably, like, melodramatic teenager the whole movie, but for those, like, 2 minutes where they're, like, happily together, he's just having the best time and, like, being so cute, and I'm just like, okay, so obviously he can portray other emotions. He just, like, this is just Edward being, like, a whiny little bitch baby.
Yeah,
it's not, I mean, like Robert Pattinson is doing a bad job. He's just making choices.
No, yeah, the choices were just to make Edward the worst, which works because he's with Bella, who is also the worst.
That is the other thing. Like, again, I love the story. There's a part of me that, like, just holds it so dearly, but they genuinely are the worst characters. Like,
they're so all of the annoying. Other
characters are better.
They're so annoying. Like, they're deeply irritating.
Hilariously, I think the only character that matches them for being annoying is Jacob. And, like, we don't even get that in this movie. Like, it doesn't come until later. But everyone else is great.
I know Stephanie Meyer never would have gone for it, but they really could have done something with the three of them. Instead,
my biggest disappointment in life.
What we got out of that storyline, which was...
I don't even want to think about it right now. We're focusing on this movie and this one movie only. Like, pain. Anyway. It's fine. Everything just feels overacted.
One portrayal that does not as much is going to be Billy Burke as Charlie.
Oh my god. Best performance in the whole movie. He's so incredible. Good.
He's so, so good as this sort of, like, awkward, taciturn father who clearly cares a lot, isn't quite sure how to express it, not quite sure about his daughter dating. Like, he Love does him. Such a he's so good in this role.
I feel like when I was so young, good. I was like, he could be my dad. Now that I'm an adult, I'm like, I would he could marry be my guy. Dad.
He could be my daddy.
Yeah, exactly. He's incredible. I love him. Like, he just does everything in this movie, like, so well in terms of the fatherly energy. And it's so clear that, like, whatever happened with his ex-wife and the distance that's been created there, like, one, he clearly doesn't really hold resentment against her.
No, he seems pretty sad about it, but and not he clearly mad.
Loves his daughter and wants a relationship with her. Whatever the case may be, and however he presents his feelings, like, he is genuinely really pleased to have her there. And, like,
he sets up her whole room for her to come back and live. Like, he's, and then when she,
so cute,
when she has to leave to keep him safe, like, she knows what to say to make him really, really sad. And I'm just going, that's my child. Stop yelling. Stop telling him these things.
And it's clear that she knows how much he loves her because, like, she acknowledges it several times. And it hurts her so much to hurt his feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, whatever the relationship was, it's not like she's like, I hate my dad and he's terrible and overbearing and I don't want to be with him. Like, she clearly very much does want to spend time and be with her dad, despite the fact that, like, she obviously doesn't want to live in Forks. Like, Forks as the town is not great, but her dad is the bright spot of that town.
I think they do a really good job, the two of them, in portraying that relationship of, like, there's a lot of love there, but a lot of awkwardness too, because they just, like, haven't seen each other that often. But, like, you get the sense that you're like, oh, these two people are actually quite similar in a lot of ways. And that makes it so that they do not know how to have this, like, have these conversations. But even at the end, like, she's very much like, no, I want to live in Forks. And it's like, it's definitely not just because of Edward. I mean, it's mostly because of Edward.
A lot because of him.
But the fact that, like, she likes living with her dad. Like, he gets the truck for her and she's so happy. Like, she loves this life that they have together. Like, he's not super involved in her life, which she likes because she is, in fact, a teen girl and he's a grown man who's her dad. And, like, that's pretty representative of the way those relationships often are. But
yeah, really, but you never get the sense that, like, he doesn't care or he's not, like, taking an interest in her or taking responsibility for her. Like, he very much does have a vested interest in her life.
He's just not quite sure, I think, sometimes what his role is and how far, like, how much of a presence to take because he hasn't spent a lot of time with her. Although there is the scene where Edward comes to pick her up for like, a date, and he's, like, such a dad about it.
Lapping that gun and whatever, just being like, yes, send him in. Which is just too funny, like, for so many reasons. I also think part of what really works for me is that, like, okay. So, again, we said this movie is very heteronormative and very straight, and, like, part of that is that Stephenie Meyer wrote Bella as, like, the ultimate pick me because I'm not like other girls, but, like, also...
I wear Converse, like, to the prom because I'm a klutzy girl and also have a broken leg.
Right, and, like, I'm not trying to be anything. I just am what I... Like me, don't, because I'm different, and, like, whatever. It falls into all the cringe stereotypes, it's fine. But, like... Kristen Stewart manages to actually deliver that really well. Like, there have been plenty of comments and whatever about her acting, but, like, again, I think it has a lot more to do with the character itself than any talent that Kristen Stewart has, because,
yeah,
as we know from many other things, she's a phenomenal actress. And she's clearly working really hard in this movie to deliver the vibe of a girl who cares way too much and is trying very hard to pretend like she doesn't care about anything and, like, not allow herself to be close to people while still, like, trying. And, like, you see that with all of her relationships with the people at school and, like, the inherent discomfort she has in, like, being perceived while also trying to actually make friends. And part of what works for me really well is that, like, with the choice to cast Billy Burke and the way that he acts and everything in this movie as Charlie, like you said, you get the sense that they are essentially very much the same in terms of, like, personality. And the way that he acts really explains a lot of Bella's behavior and, like, makes it more realistic for me and make more sense for me as a character, because if her dad was this very, like, chill, bubbly, whatever kind of social person, and then she was very awkward and uncomfortable, mm-hmm, it would, like, work less. But I'm just like, oh, she's just her father's daughter,
right?
Like, she's just awkward, it's not her fault.
Mm-hmm. We don't get a ton of it in the movie, we get a little bit more in the books, but, like, her relationship with her mom, where it's pretty clear that she has done a lot of the parenting of her mom until her mom's new husband sort of came along and took up that role, but that she's always sort of been the responsible one and the one sort of mothering her parent a little bit. There's a little bit of parentification going on there. And so I think that she doesn't, I don't know, we don't know much about her life in Arizona, but it seems like she's probably spent most of her life trying to take care of her mother and thus hasn't spent much time trying to just be a teen girl.
Yes.
And so she kind of doesn't know how.
I also think that parentification really feeds into the sense that she has of herself, that she is, like, grown. And right, therefore in a position to make decisions like, yes, I would like to become a vampire and be in a relationship forever that I just met a month ago because I am unequivocally and irrevocably in love with him. Like, okay, ma'am, like, we get it. But yeah, like, I mean, she definitely has had to behave in a way that is more mature for her age than maybe necessary. But I think because of that, it's made her believe that she has a maturity that is, like, beyond her years. And it's, I mean, questionable if that is actually the case. But she certainly thinks so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's pretty clear as the movie goes that she is not, in fact, the adult she thinks she is.
Yes.
And that's something that happens more throughout the course of the whole sort of series, but it's there is that inflated sense of like, I'm a grown now, I can do what growns do and be in a relationship with this grown old man.
Right, like, well, yes, exactly.
And I think that is part of the draw for her, is she sees herself as sort of apart from all of the students at their school, and then she's like, oh, they're also different, they're also apart from them in this way, like, it's a kindred spirit kind of thing of like, oh, we're both too mature for this. And it's like, hmm.
And not just mature, but like, I think she simultaneously feels like separate, but also like she's a bit of a celebrity in their eyes. Because in this movie, Forks is a very small town. And it has, like, this one school where all of these students go, and basically, like, her being a new student is sensational. Like, they don't get new students like this all the time. So part of the reason that all of the boys there are obsessed with her and think that she's so interesting is because, like, she's just new. She's different, and they're so used to all the girls that they've grown up with that to have a new girl there is, like, a big deal. So they all... they don't have that bias of like, yes, I remember you from kindergarten, we cried at the pool party or whatever. Like, she's mysterious.
And well, Jessica even says it. She's like, it's, you know, it's like first grade all over again, and you're the shiny new toy. Like, you're the new thing here in an existence that is pretty gray and rainy and boring. You are new, and that's so exciting. So, yeah, I absolutely agree that I think that a lot of it comes from that. Because it's not just the guys, it's, you know, the girls are all similarly interested.
Yes, absolutely.
Less in less creepy ways, but...
yes, like, they're very interested in her, which, again, like, isn't necessarily a bad thing. And, like, it's very logical in the context of the movie and the story. But it really doesn't help with, you know, pulling away or, like, pushing back against that idea of her kind of being that sort of, like, pick-me-girl story. Because whether she's going for that or not, like, that's how the story is portraying her.
Mm-hmm.
As different than everybody else.
Yeah.
So... as we mentioned, the coloring and everything of this movie is a choice. What are your feelings on just the visual quality of the movie overall?
It's definitely one of those things where you watch now and you're like, ugh. It's not, they hadn't quite figured out how to make everything look as gloomy and gray and rainy, and how to make the vampires look as sort of pale and washed out as they are. They hadn't quite figured out how to make everything have that kind of blue without completely making everything look flat. Except for things that were, like, brightly colored. Like, I mentioned Edward's hair, which just looks absurd. In comparison. And I know that they wanted to make Bella, like, paler and, you know, more luminescent than everybody else, and obviously there's the sparkling thing they do with Edward, and it just looks very of its time, and like they hadn't quite figured out how to do the effects and how to do the blue filtering and the gray filtering without making everything else look like it's both under and over saturated at the same time.
Yes, the movie came out in 2008, and yet it appears older than it is
Yeah.
because of the way that it's done. Also, it's very clear they went for a lot of like practical effects with the physical things that the characters do in terms of like the jumping and the flying through the air and the whatever. But there's several times when they do certain things with that where it's very clear the actors are like on a wire and not necessarily in a good way because they don't really follow the laws of physics as would make sense if they were actually like just performing those jumps or those movements or whatever. Like one of the ones that was very obvious to me is the scene in the ballet studio where Bella is running and James like leaps over her because he's following this arc of movement and then all of a sudden he just keeps going straight and instead of like the arc continuing. And it's such a weird minor complaint, but it's just like, oh, yeah, you've made it so obvious that he's not jumping. He's like zipping on a wire across this room. And for me as a viewer, it kind of pulls me out of the reality or like the created reality of this movie because I'm like reminded that this isn't something that the character is doing in like jumping. I'm actively thinking about the fact that the actor is on a wire and pulled across the room.
Yeah, they do. There's also like the hold on tight spider monkey scene that looks really, really
Weird, just
silly.
weird.
Really silly.
It kills me because like it's not even necessarily a flaw of the story or the storytelling, it's a flaw of the effects.
Yeah.
Like maybe that line is cheesy or not, maybe the thing that they're doing or whatever is really corny, but like that's not actually what bothers me about it. It's the fact that I watch it and I'm just like, this just looks weird and unrealistic and fake.
Does. I will tell you what isn't, like, I will tell you the thing that easily makes the movie as iconic as it is, and that's the music. The
Oh, the
soundtrack
music's
is
so
like
good.
the thing that you come back to over and over again, where you're like, yes, they got, you know, it's got Muse on it, it's got Linkin Park, like, it's got this incredible soundtrack, that so perfectly fits. It's got Paramore, like, it's everything on it is exactly what you want it to be to fit that sort of brooding, gray, gloomy kind of. And that remains true throughout like all of the movies. I know we're not talking about them all, but like they consistently hit it out of the park with the music. The use of like
Yes.
super massive Black Hole and Decode,
Yes.
and Leave Out All the Rest, like it
Yeah, Flightless Bird, American Mouth at the end when they dance, like really hits that like beautiful romantic note and everything, like
it's so good. It really, really all just hits so well. And so I think it's one of those things where you're like, I watched the movie just for the soundtrack. It's like I don't have to look at anything happening, but you hear those opening sort of moments in the music and you're like,
I can't
yeah,
tell
this
you
is
how
the
many times
stuff.
I've put the soundtrack of this music on, like pulled it up on Pandora or whatever in my car and just like listened to it as I was driving back and forth to class when I was in college. Like it is truly an excellent soundtrack. What bumps for me is that obviously they have the comp specifically for the movie. Not like Bella's Lullaby or anything, like not the stuff that they composed to argue that Edward composed on the piano, but like specifically the transitional pieces of music that they composed to like bring you in and out of
Oh
scenes
my
and like
God, yeah.
deliver emotional impact. And there's several things that they do with that it's not that the music is bad, it's that it feels like it's not the right choice emotionally or like tonally because they're clearly trying to go for a certain feel or vibe. But I just don't think that they either go for the right feel or that they're doing it exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Sorry to whoever composed the original music on this movie. Like, there are several scenes when they're clearly trying to emphasize, like, fear or whatever. Like, the baseball scene where, like, they're doing such a great job with the use of supermassive black hole. And then they bring the other vampires in and clearly, like, putting this composed music in to try to give you the sense of, like, this is actually a really tense scene. And they just don't really manage to deliver the tension. Yeah. And, like, part of it is the acting, but part of it is also the music that accompanies it. Again, it just... It's just, like, it's not... I don't know if it's just not subtle enough, or if it's just not, like, on the money enough. But that happens, like, a number of times in the movie where they, like, do this thing, and I'm like, I know what emotion you're trying to evoke. You're just not...
Right.
Hitting that for me.
Not quite. Yeah. Well, like, you get the baseball scene. The baseball game scene. And then the, like, we have to not... Oh, turns out that it's actually a person, a human, and not another vampire whole thing. And they all, like... And the scene of the, like, bad vampires walking through the forest, it just looks like they're on a moving walkway at the airport. And so I just keep expecting them to hear... The moving walkway is coming to an end. Please watch your step.
Again, like, I think they just could have gone for a little bit scarier music. Like, they just...
Yeah.
They really went for, like, high fashion drama instead of, like, actual horror tension. Because right. I think what they weren't willing to do was actually cross the line into any of this is scary. They didn't want to push for any kind of, like, real tension or horror in the movie because... I think that in the creator's mind, it's a romance. And I'm like, okay, yes, it is a romance. But it's also a monster movie. And, like,
yeah,
part of the draw of this romance is that he's a vampire who could murder her. And, like, there are other vampires out there who want to murder her. And in spite of the fact he could murder her and eat her, like, he loves her too much to do that and is going to protect her with his life. That only sells if there's actual believable threat to her life. Yeah. And you're not managing to make me buy into the threat to her life. Like,
I know. And that's part of that's like the amount of time we have in the movie to tell everything. Yeah. Because in the book, there's like a lot more build up to like, oh, you know, James has been around her house or like, oh, he's doubling back or like, oh, like there's a lot more of that feeling. And in the movie that they just didn't have time to do all of that stuff. And so there just was less of that ominous feeling. It was basically just like, well, he's super into you now and intrigued. And so he's going to come kill you.
But also okay. The only person you really see die on screen is James. And his death is like ridiculous looking.
Right. But well, like, I guess we don't see the guy who gets killed at his boat, right? We just see the build up to that with the vampires being, I don't know, a little greasy. Right,
the conversation. And it's delivered too jokey and too, like, wittily to feel scary. You can't, you don't empathize with the fear of the man and buy into the fear because you're too focused on, oh, they're making funny jokes and, like, quips. And you don't hear him, like, you don't really hear him scream. You don't, like, see them descend on him and, like, actually murder him or anything. So, like, you don't hear any of their other victims scream. You don't, like, even see really, like, blood or anything that would indicate, like, actual violence. And again, I understand why. This movie's for teenagers. They were keeping a certain rating. It's not a horror movie, so they're trying to stick to a certain genre. But, like... While I'm not saying we should watch them, like, actively rip this man limb from limb on the screen, they didn't actually do anything to really emphasize that this is, like, a horrible, scary thing that happened to this man or any of their other victims, and that Bella and any of the rest of the characters should be holding actual fear of the fact that there's a killer out there. The only person who seems emotionally impacted by this at all is Charlie. Like,
yes. Right. Nobody else seems to, like, care at all that this man they know is dead.
Yeah,
and multiple people have died.
They just, again, they just don't sell the fear. And, like, I think their one attempt to really do that is with the men in the alley following Bella around.
Right.
But they don't connect that back to the idea that, like, there's a killer hunting mm-hmm. people in the city. So, like, as viewers, we're not able to make the connection of, like, oh, Bella or the other young women or anybody else might be scared of being in the city alone. They don't even comment on it. Nothing. Like, there's nothing that happens to indicate, like, anybody should be concerned because people have been getting murdered.
There's, like, the scene where the waitress just comes up to Charlie and is like, are you gonna find out what happened?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it just feels so separate. Like, it just feels so disconnected from Bella and her friends and her life and Evelyn's. Yeah. Like, there's just, oh, there's this B plot happening. So by the time you get to the vampires and everything, and, like, James is like, ah, yes, I'm gonna murder her. Like, I mean, are you, though? Clearly Edward's gonna save her and she'll be fine. So, like, whatever. There, I don't know. He just, the threat doesn't ever feel real.
And no, it does not. And even at the very end, where they make it clear that, like, Victoria is still out there and, like, is watching, that also doesn't feel particularly real. Like, I don't know what it was about that actress. I just don't think she worked in that role particularly well, because everything felt like it was a sort of greasy, slimy joke, but not an escape. Like, she was trying to be a little too smooth and oily, and it just sort of didn't quite work to make her seem scary. She just seemed kind of like a joke.
Right. Yeah, like, if what they were going for was, like, inhuman because she doesn't have empathy or she's detached from humanity or whatever, again, like, they just didn't quite nail it. I don't know. Again, it's not even necessarily the problem with the story. It's just the delivery. Because I watched this movie again, obviously, to record about it. And as I was watching it the whole time, all I could think was, this could have been an excellent movie. Like, if they had just done certain things differently, this movie would be incredible. Whatever you have to say about the story or the plot or the fact that he's a creepy old man who's climbing into her bedroom and watching her sleep, whatever. But, like, they could have written this and shot it and delivered it in a way that was incredibly suspenseful and romantic. And, like, you're really buying into the ship. You're really buying into her attachment to him. You're really buying into her fear of everything. And because of the way that it was delivered, I just didn't buy into any mm-hmm. of it. Which is insane, because mm-hmm. I obviously bought into the book enough to go watch this movie in the theater.
The book was like 500 pages long, so there was a little more to it. And also, you read it when True. You were like a teen.
True. But I'm just saying, as an adult, like,
it doesn't quite hold up.
Well, like, I haven't read the book in forever, but, like, I remember so many details of the story. And as I'm watching, I'm thinking, as an adult, like, I could see a version of this movie that I would be like, this movie is amazing. I don't know why people like it, because it's so good. There's a version of it in my head that I'm like, if they had just done certain things differently, it would have been excellent.
Isn't that always the way, though? Where you're like, if they had just changed everything about this, it could have been great.
It's such... mean, yeah. It's, I don't know. It's just such a bummer because I'm like, it still would have been what it was. It still would have been the story that it was. But in terms of the quality of the yeah. movie, as far as like production and stuff, they could have done it so well. And for whatever reason, they chose not to. And the quality of the movie is poor. And so then I think people watch it and they're like, well, this movie sucks. And therefore this story sucks. And I'm like, well, those are two totally different things.
Like, yeah.
Whether the story sucks or not is separate from the fact that this movie is awful.
Yeah. it's just not really a very good movie, but there's something really charming about that because you watch it and you're just like, wow, this is so bad. I love it.
Yes. And I mean, as memory serves, the other movies do get better. I don't know if there was a change in staff like or director or anything
second
else.
And
like
third were really pretty good.
Yeah.
And then yeah. I feel like the second and third. And then yeah, there was a different director for the other ones, I believe. Actually bunches of different directors. They didn't have any really
same directors.
The only repeat directors were for the last two. But yeah, it
well, I mean, sorry to Nikki Reed. I, you know, I'm not trying to say that you're a bad director. And she
wasn't.
She's
Nikki
directed
Reed.
Other things. I'm not Nikki Reed. I'm
Catherine
wow.
Hardwick.
Catherine Hardwick. I don't know why. I'm looking at the list of stuff that she directed and I'm seeing she co-wrote something with Nikki Reed.
Yeah.
Who was obviously one of the actors in
Rosalie,
this movie.
Yeah.
Yes, but Catherine Hardwick. Sorry, Catherine Hardwick. I'm not saying you're a bad director. I've seen other things that you've directed and like
just
this
saying
is not
that
like you just saying you're
this was
terrible.
A bad movie you directed.
Yeah, just saying that this movie, for whatever reason, whether it was because both, it just like did not come out well.
Part of it was a combination of things.
I mean, part of me really wonders if the reason why it turned out the way that it did was in part because of the kind of movie that it is, and the fact that, you know, the production company was like, and the network was clearly going for like a specific vibe in terms of like teenage drama, vampire fantasy, whatever. And again, so they just couldn't allow themselves to lean into certain elements too hard. Like they just refused to go too hard into some of the like darker elements of it.
Right.
Which honestly I think is like to the detriment of the movie. I think if they had just gone a mm-hmm. little bit more with that, it really would have worked because it would have created not only a really nice balance for a lot of the emotional impact of like the romance, but also like it would have just really emphasized those big emotional moments and like mm-hmm. the climax and, you know, with the movie.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. There are definitely things they could have done that would have made the adaptation like feel less cheesy, because I think that's part of that's one of the big things, is it just feels so very cheesy because of the overacting and because of the choices made, sort of.
Yeah.
Also, like, they used a lot of like single handheld cameras to like try to portray some of the things going on, but I think the problem is that it just came across as everything being a little unfinished and not really.
It has
a
little bit of a low budget feel.
Yeah, and not in a like, there are ways to do handheld camera that can really work to build tension and stuff like that, but in this case it just feels like it's not that well made.
Yeah, I don't know. And again, like, I mean, there are plenty of things in the story that I'm like, this is questionable, or this is, you know, something as an adult that I'm just like, I'm rolling my eyes and judging these characters. But like, for what it is, for it being a vampire story written when it was, and for the audience that it was, you know, like, I actually don't really have significant issues with this story. At least up to like the Renesmee part, and then I'm like, okay, that's an issue.
Oh, but my
like,
god, we
Twilight itself, like the story actually, I don't like take major issue with, given what it is
no.
and who it's written for. Which I think is what makes the movie so much more disappointing.
Yeah,
like
I will say that one of the things that I think is notable is that the script. The screenplay had to be finished very quickly because there were other screenplays of the book that basically got trashed. And then this, because the movie went through, like, there were several different homes that had the rights to it for a while, including, like, a group associated with MTV that wanted to make it, like, an action film.
No.
You know, Bella was supposed to be a long-distance runner in it, and there were supposed to be firearms involved.
Wait. So what you're telling me is, this is not the worst version of the movie we could have gotten by, like, a wide margin.
Apparently, that's... MTV Films was given a, given a script that included, Bella Swan being a long-distance runner, cursing, using shotguns against vampires who killed her father, being turned into a vampire, and riding a jet ski while being chased by the FBI.
Horrifying.
And then, basically, Stephanie Meyer has been like, they could have filmed it, but they couldn't have called it Twilight because it had nothing to do with the book.
That just... Oh...
But all of that to say that eventually the screenplay we got was finished right before the writer's strike. And so they had to rush to finish it to get it done. And so I feel like perhaps, that could have something to do with, like, they just didn't have time to go through, like, rewrites and edits the way that you might think. And so that means some of the scenes are a little unpolished.
Yeah, and honestly, that makes a lot of sense. And again, like, this is not me an attempt to, like, diss Catherine Hardwicke or anyone else who was responsible for the production of this movie. Like, I'm not saying that they are not, you know, good at their job or able to deliver amazing products in other things. Like, it's just a combination of so many things. Like, and also, I mean, like, this is not the only movie of that time that, for whatever reason, just, like, is weirdly overdramatic and oversaturized and just, like, has such an odd vibe like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, I think part of what is weird about this movie is the fact that it's just written for teens, and so, like, there's a little bit about it that I'm like, oh, part of the reason it doesn't work is because it just feels like certain other movies that were also made kind of similarly in the same time that maybe just are completely different in terms of, like, story and tone, but for some reason were styled in a similar way. Like, the one that really I think of automatically is the 2004 Van Helsing movie.
Mm.
Like, that movie also suffers a lot of similar issues in terms of, like, the blue screen and the weird effects and the funky tone and, like, some of the overdramatic acting and whatever and, like, choices that were made. But I'm like, that is an entirely different movie because it actually is, like, a genre fantasy horror movie, and yeah. this is like a teen romance yeah. movie.
Some of the Harry Potter films also suffered from that. The like yeah. everything for a while it was this whole thing of like everything needs to be blue. We're going blue and washed out. We're done with saturation. Color, get out.
It's also wild because they're like, it just rains all the time, and yet we like rarely ever see rain on screen.
There's so many like, times where they're like, it's never sunny, and then in the windows there's just sun the whole time. It's like, it yes. might be kind of cloudy and overcast, but it's still sunny. There's still...
Yes. And like, again, I'm like, that would have been an easy fix. You could have made everything a little bit less blue, and you could have just made it rain.
I also want to point out when Edward's like, we have to go up out of the cloud cover. It's like, babe, that's not how clouds work. You'd have to go way higher than up this little hill to find a single sunny patch to show off your sparkly body.
Oh. Choices that were made. There were so many choices made. It's fine. Yes, but needless to say, like, there are a lot of things. But in terms of, like, what the story is and what the movie represents, like, whether you love the story or hate it, and no matter how good or poorly this movie, like, actually was in terms of its creation, it did obviously, again, have a huge impact on not just the audience that bought into it, but also like vampire stories in general. Like, this was the modern vampire story for a while, and as much as people like tease about it and make jokes or whatever about, you know, him creepily watching her in the bedroom or the sparkly skin or whatever, like, I do think it was a pretty significant shift kind of back into vampires becoming so popular. Yeah. It clearly wasn't the only thing. Like I said, there were still vampire stories being told in a modern time. But this really was the story that was saying, like, one, vampires are still a thing even in modern day. And also, like, they're open to, like, explicitly being part of, like, a romance, not just being a monster.
Yeah.
And boy, yeah, have people really run with that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Going forward, we'll talk about other sort of monsters and vampires that do balance the horror and the romance a little bit better. But for now, is there anything else about this movie you're feeling totally normal about that we should talk about?
We didn't really talk about the rest of the Cullen family very much.
I was just thinking about that.
What are your feelings on the rest of the Cullens in general, and like specifically in this movie?
We just don't get a lot from them. I mean, we get... Rosalie doesn't like Bella, but we don't really get any explanation for why that is. Jasper is the newest member of their family, and thus still wants to eat people. And then you get Alice and Emmett, who seem to be sort of the most just adjusted. To this way of life. Like, they're both fine with Bella. I think Emmett's just like, whatever, basically, but Alice loves her. And then Esme and Carlisle, I think it's, I don't know, like, their whole thing where they've cooked up, like, we'll go someplace and then you'll be high school students and we can be here for a little bit longer.
I love the fact that, like, Rosalie's whole issue seems to just be like, this is dangerous.
Yes.
Bringing Bella into our family and into our lives. as a human, with Edward having no intention to turn her, like, that's dangerous and not a great choice, and I just don't like it. So, like, I get her being off-put, even if, again, they don't explain a lot of, like, what the danger is of that, other than, you know, Bella could die.
We find out in later books and movies more of what Rosalie's issue is.
Yes. But
for this one, we do not.
And Jasper, at least, like, again, he's a little bit of a weirdo, and, like, he, you know, he's obviously struggling because he's still adjusting to not murdering humans and whatever, and being around them all the time. So, like, as odd as he is, like, I get the struggle. As you said, the rest of them seem pretty well adjusted. And, like, that just makes Edward seem even weirder. Like,
right.
He is the odd one of the family. Like, not only is he weird because he's a vampire, but he's just a weirdo even among his family. He's kind of like the black sheep in some ways. Because they're all just like, yeah, we're like, we're vampires and there's stuff with the humans, but in terms of our family, I'm suffering. I will always suffer. I am miserable. I am in a hell of my own making. And they're like, I know. Okay, but we're having a great time. And he's like, okay.
He's got his fainting couch in his bedroom.
He does!
for his most important sulks.
He's so pouty and like...
He's so pouty all the time. He's brooding. He's so woe is me at all times. And I think it's so funny that they're like, we go to school and we blend in with everyone else. And it's like, okay, but you don't because you don't speak to anyone else. So right, everyone they're thinks weird. You're weird. Also, why are you presenting yourself as like, I don't know.
High school kids?
Well, high school kids, but also as like two parents with their foster kids.
Right. And they're like, and they're together. And it's, which that's the thing. That is the one thing that I'm like, is hilarious about the fact that it's like treated as so weird because yes, I do get it. Part of why it like is hilarious to me is because the people who are cast to play the Cullen children like don't look like high schoolers.
No.
And I'm like, they could just be adults. And like, if they had chosen actors who looked younger, it would make more sense that like they have to play pretend to be high schoolers because they're too young to like pretend to be adults.
Mm-hmm.
But like, they don't look like high schoolers, so
right,
why are they making themselves go to high school?
Right. I also like I don't know. It's funny because, like, the last names they choose, like, you've got Carlisle and Esme Cullen, and then you've got Edward Cullen and Alice Cullen and Emmett Cullen, I guess. But then it's Jasper and Rosalie Hale. So they're acting like Jasper and Rosalie are, like, siblings, like, blood siblings, who are the foster kids of Carlisle and Esme. And these other three are just their adopted kids or whatever. Like, they're... But I just think it's fun. It's like, why wouldn't you just have them all have the last... Like...
Again, it's such a choice.
Or have different last names. Because then it would feel less weird.
Also, like... Are they all supposed to be the same age? Like, I mean, they're all in high school. Are they all in the same grade? Or are they all...
They must be, like... because I think that... maybe I feel like in the books, Emmett and Rosalie or some... Like, a couple of them are supposed to be a year ahead.
Yeah.
I think that's the way it is in the book, is, like, a couple of them are a year ahead or whatever. And Edward and Alice are in the same year. And then the other three are the year above. I think that's the way it's... It is, but it's like, also, why would you choose this town where, like, okay, you're going to high school, but then you could just go on to college if you lived somewhere that was, like, a big enough town that had universities. You could all go on to different universities, and I guess they've done that at times, but it does seem like they built this huge house in the woods for what's going to end up being, like, a few years.
Right. And I guess, again, the fact is they're like, if we leave, we'll circle back to this town in, you know, 50 years when people don't remember us, or 100 years or whatever. But like, part of what doesn't make sense to me is, like, again, all of them are so young that they can pretend to go to high school or, like, continue to go to high school. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, are none of the family members that were turned, like, why are none of them old enough to even work a job except for Carlisle and Esme, who, like, are clearly the best? But, like, it makes more sense in the book, again, because you can't see them. So right. You can imagine them any way you want. But in the movie, they're all cast as older adults. And so then it's like, okay, Rosalie, what are you doing in high school? Like, it would make more sense if they said, this is Esme's sister who lives with them.
Right.
Like, but they cast her as their daughter or their foster daughter and put her in high school. And I'm like, they're like, well, the younger we pretend to be, the longer we stay. And I'm like, really? Because I feel like I would buy it more if you said this 24 and then you stayed until she's 30. And I would buy it more actually that an adult didn't seem to change her age as much, because she's mm-hmm. no longer going through puberty. And like, you could argue that, well, maybe she's just really fit. Maybe she has plastic surgery. Maybe she gets injections or takes vitamins or whatever. And she's aging. Because teenagers age, like,
quickly.
And they develop very quickly. Yeah, they're going through puberty. And I'm
there's no way that anyone looks at Emmett and is like, 14-year-old boy.
Right. And so I'm like, at what point, like, if anything, putting them in high school means they have to move sooner because they're not changing and they should be. Whereas, like, adults, I'm like, oh, yes, you just still look 23, whatever. Like, you're 33, but you still look like a baby. What supplements do you take?
Yeah, like, what's it? Drop your skincare routine.
Right. Like, oh, are you, like, you're not here on the days that it's nice? Is that because you're, you know, getting lip filler on those days? Whatever.
It's sunny. I need to go get in. Oh, my God. My cheek is.
I don't know. I'm like, you're going to special therapy or something. Or, like, getting something done with your skin. You're getting
Spa.
We're going to spa days. Yeah, like, I'm like, okay, I'd buy that more. And I'm buying the fact that, like, you showed up and said, hey, I'm a 14-year-old girl. And yes, I am fully developed. And yes, and I'm just going to continue to look like this until you say I'm 19 and I'm going to suddenly move. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Okay. I also, like, they don't ever mention their ages in the movie.
Uh-huh.
But we do find out in the books at some point, or at least the Wikipedia claims, that Carlisle's physical age is 23 and Esme's is 26. And I'm sorry, you're telling me that anyone believes that a 23-year-old man is, like, has gone through medical school?
It makes no sense!
And has five 17-year-old children.
That's the other issue, is, like,
couldn't they have just presented Carlisle as their, like, older brother?
Choices that are made, I swear to God. Like, choices that are made,
I swear, like, this could have been, like, because Carlisle is also blonde, he could have been, like, Rosalie and Jasper's older brother and his wife, or whatever. I mean, that doesn't explain the Edward situation, but, like, clearly they need to find somebody in their 40s to be their vampire leader, because they all look like they're too young.
It's just such a choice. Like, there are just so many choices that are made in terms of their family, both by Stephenie Meyer in the books and then in these movies, that I'm like, okay, all right, well, yes, I question the logic skills of the rest of the people in this town. But
right.
The one thing that does work, obviously fit with the ages in the books or whatever, but, like, at least the person they cast to be Carlisle and Esme, like, do look like fully grown adults.
Yeah, they did do that well. Because in the books, Emmett also, his physical age is 20, and so he's only supposed to be 3 years younger than Carlisle. So it's good that they did, like...
Right, like, I'm like, at least I can believe that Carlisle is old enough in these movies to be their foster dad. Even if I'm like, well, he's too young to have, like, birth himself, maybe. Maybe he's, you know, barely 30. Whatever. At least he looks like a grown adult. He doesn't mm-hmm. look like he's that significantly younger than Billy. Like, I'm right. like, okay, he's dad-aged.
Yeah.
But, like, that doesn't mean that they look like teenagers. Which, at least the people that they cast to be the other high schoolers do all seem to be, like, actual teenagers. I mean, they were sure all a little bit older.
Yeah, well, I mean, even, like, Robert Pattinson was, like, 19.
Right.
Ashley Green was, like, 18. So, like, they were older teenagers, but they were plausible in the way that some of the others were less.
Yes.
So.
And, like, all the people that play the other school students who are, like, Bella's friends and classmates mm-hmm. and whatnot, like, they actually look like teenagers who would be in they high do. School. And, like, maybe part of the reason that the Coens look older is because they're so different or whatever, but, like, I do at least appreciate that that works, where I'm like, okay, well, they're yeah. teenagers, like.
Yeah.
It's. I don't know. It's hilarious.
I do feel like I need to talk, and you specifically wanted me to talk about vegetarianism.
Oh my god, yes. Okay, because that's something that is discussed. They're vegetarian vampires. And Edward makes the comment in this movie about how, like, it's like if a person only eats tofu or whatever, they could survive on it, but they'd never be fully satisfied. And I was like, oh, I need Nell to talk about that.
Yeah, so I'm a vegetarian, for people who don't know. I've been a vegetarian for 20-ish years. Somewhere in there. I don't remember exactly when I became a vegetarian, but I was a child. And like
about as long as this movie's been out. Don't just saying.
Close your mouth. Close your mouth right now. I always find, first of all, like, you're not a vegetarian if you drink animal blood. Like, you're just not a cannibal.
Out here just, like, voluntarily drinking animal blood, by the way. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some people do it, but, like...
Look, anyway. I don't know. It's not my life. But, like, it's not vegetarianism to do that. It's just, like, vampires drinking human blood is closer to cannibalism than...
Uh-huh.
And then drinking animal blood would just be, like, not doing that.
Right, just be, like, people killing animals to eat.
Right. As a vegetarian, the tofu thing is stupid because, like, I don't just eat tofu.
Right.
Like, vegetarians do and can and do have very, very varied diets full of lots of different things. And also, tofu is delicious, so fuck you, Edward.
Like, what got me is he's saying it's not satisfying, and I was like,
he hasn't had tofu prepared the right way.
Well, and I'm like, you're implying that... You're implying that vegetarian or vegan meals are just not good? Like, there's just something...
Yeah, he's like one of those people who goes around and is like, I could never eat a meal without meat. I need meat at all of my meals. And I'm just sitting here like, that's not... You're missing out.
Necessary?
Yeah. So, like, that's not how vegetarianism is. Like, I eat many meals that are extremely satisfying. And tofu is part of some of those meals. And, in fact, can be very... Perhaps he's like my friend who once ate a pound of raw tofu smothered in sriracha. Which I can agree would probably be a pretty unsatisfying meal. But... Edward, you're doing it wrong.
I mean, again, the book was written in 2005 and the movie came out in 2008. So I feel like I remember a lot of really
bad takes about vegetarianism.
Yeah, bad takes about vegetarianism and the things in general in that age. Yeah. I mean, misunderstandings about like varied diets have existed for a long time, and this was quite an era for diet culture, and you know, those and vegetarians really got a lot of flack in that time, so I guess it makes sense it carried over into these movies. But you'd think that the idea that they would try to present would at least fall in line with something like, it's not, I don't know, it's not like as, it's not like sufficient in some way in terms of like health, like nutritionally, whatever. Right. Because not that that's true. I mean,
or even just say that like the flavor, it's not, it doesn't taste as good.
Right. Whatever. But like to, but the argument to compare it to vegetarianism and then just say it's satisfying. I'm like, I know a lot of the arguments against vegetarianism from the time were like, well, you don't get all the complete proteins and whatever, lacking nutritionally. And again, that's not true. Like, that is a misunderstanding of how vegetarian and how protein works. But like, at least that would fit the mentality, just to be like, it's not as satisfying. I'm like, what is unsatisfying even mean to you, though? Like, are you just always hungry? Are you just like unhappy with your meal? Like, you just have a craving you can't. It could mean so many things, and that's just not a good description.
Right. Yeah, it's not. And I take deep offense.
And it, I guess it implies that vegetarians secretly want meat and are, like, punishing themselves. And I'm like, that only works if you're Edward, who is the kind of person, like, exists purely out of, like, right, guilt and a desire to punish himself.
Right. Like, I'm sorry, but I stopped eating meat because I don't want to eat meat. Not because I was like, well, you're bad, which means no bacon for you. I'm not. I just don't want to eat meat.
So, I mean, this is kind of unrelated, but like, you know, we're talking about Edward's personality. Obviously, 50 Shades of Grey was like originated out of a like Twilight fan fiction or whatever. And the most shocking thing about that to me is that she made Christian Grey the Dom in the story, because I'm just like, given Edward's intense desire for like self-flagellation, like, it just doesn't make sense that he's the Dom in that story at all. Like, he just desperately needs to be punished.
Where's that version of the screenplay?
I'm just saying, like, it just doesn't make sense to me. It's like, character-wise, because like, he's the one who's just like, I'm terrible and horrible and no good, and like, everything about me is awful, and I'm like, so fucked up, and I just like feel so bad, and I'm like, okay, well, like,
so what you're saying is that we could fix him with a paddle.
Absolutely. 100%. Like, what is the thing that like they the girl did in the Supernatural episode with like the flail or whatever? I'm the, like,
oh, yeah. The, like basically that, like this sort of deal.
Like, that's just what he wants so bad. Yeah. To, like,
I mean, he spends the entire time self-flagellating, like, just with his yes. mind, just in his brain. Like, ugh, this is the skin of a killer, Bella.
Like, I just think if someone did it for him and then said, like, yeah, I decide how much you get punished, that is sufficient. And then, like, maybe he could, like, smile more. I don't know.
This is taking a turn for the NSFW, my god. Yes, I do think
we're rated explicit, it's fine.
I do think that he does need somebody to punish him a little bit, although I just don't know that anyone could ever do it quite as much as he does to himself, because my god, he is such a pain in the ass about it.
Right. He's he also so has exhausting. A whole thing about like how he needs control, and like, I think it would be good for him to have someone else who, like, took control and was, like, telling him what he can and can't do. He just had to,
ties,
like,
him up.
I'm just saying, Edward Cullen is, like, the epitome of someone who is desperate to be dominated.
He just needs a little BDSM in his life. It'll be
he
fine.
Needs so much BDSM in his life. He just is a begging for someone to come and dominate him.
Well,
and I think that's honestly why the relationship with Bella works, is because he's like, this is what I need. And she's like, no, we're going to do what I want. Like, it works.
Okay, but I think the thing that works so well is because for him, staying away from her blood but being close to her is the ultimate punishment. Like, he's punishing himself every time he's around her because he has to deal with the scent and he has to hold
yes.
back. Like,
and
it's the
every time
form
he's successful,
of denial.
He gets praised. She's like, you're such a good boy. I know you've never hurt me. You're doing so great right now.
I want to be turned into a vampire. Yeah, so, like, he's already punishing himself.
I don't think Stephenie Meyer intended this to be so kinky, but, like, she really got there. You know what this is?
She chose vampires.
This is how, like, it's how religious repression, like, yeah. comes out in the end. It's just, like, monstrosity and kink.
She chose vampires. This is her own fault. Vampires are inherently kinky, even in Twilight.
Right? That's what religious guilt gets you. I speak the truth.
You're really satisfied right now. Yeah.
I know I'm right, so. Anyway.
Well. If you thought that this was the end of vampires, don't worry. It's not.
Oh, and it's also not the end of self-flagellation or religious guilt, because next week we are going to be talking about Interview with the Vampire. We are kicking off that discussion by talking about, and then subsequently we will eventually talk about the show. So if you want to hear more about guilt-ridden vampires and, you know, their desire to punish themselves, then come back next week and join us.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't wait.
Bye.
Bye.
Totally Normal About That is a podcast hosted and produced by Lucia and Nell. Are you feeling totally normal about something we talked about today? Is there a piece of media you feel totally normal about? We want to hear about it. You can find us on Twitter at @totallynormalat, or you can email us at totallynormalaboutthat@gmail.com. And if you are enjoying these episodes, please leave us a rating or review on your podcast app of choice.